Chapter 5. Fill up his time profitably. The boys would be quite of the family, the finest thing in the world for them, underselling's I continually. But do you think they'd give the poor lad twice o' pudding? Said Mrs. Tulliver, who was now in her place again. He's such a boy for pudding as never was, and a growing boy like that, it's dreadful to think o' their stintin' him. And what money 'ud he want? Said Mr. Tulliver, whose instinct told him that the services of this admirable M.A. would bear a high price. Why, I know of a clergyman who asks 150 with his youngest pupils, and he's not to be mentioned with Stelling, the man I speak of. I know, on good authority, that one of the chief people at Oxford said, Stelling might get the highest honors if he chose. But he didn't care about university honors. He's a quiet man, not noisy. Ah, a deal better, said Mr. Tulliver. But 150's an uncommon price. I never thought o' paying so much as that. A good education, let me tell you, Tulliver, a good education is cheap at the money. But Stelling is moderate in his terms. He's not a grasping man. I've no doubt he'd take your boy at 100, and that's what you wouldn't get many other clergymen to do. I'll write to him about it, if you like. Mr. Tulliver rubbed his knees, and looked at the carpet in a meditative manner. But belike he's a bachelor, observed Mrs. Tulliver, in the interval, and I've no opinion o' housekeepers. There was my brother, as is dead and gone, had a housekeeper once, and she took half the feathers out o' the best bed, and packed them up, and sent them away. And it's unknown the linen she made away with what her name was. It 'ud break my heart to send Tom where there's a housekeeper, and I hope you won't think of it, Mr. Tulliver. You may set your mind at rest on that score, Mrs. Tulliver, said Mr. Riley, for Stelling is married to as nice a little woman as any man need wish for a wife. There isn't a kinder little soul in the world. I know her family well. She has very much your complexion, light curly hair. She comes of a good Mudport family, and it's not every offer that would have been acceptable in that quarter. But Stelling's not an everyday man. Rather a particular fellow, as to the people he chooses to be connected with. But I think he would have no objection to take your son. I think he would not, on my representation. I don't know what he could have against the lad, said Mrs. Tulliver, with a slight touch of motherly indignation. A nice fresh-skinned lad as anybody need wish to see. But there's one thing I'm thinking on, said Mr. Tulliver, turning his head on one side and looking at Mr. Riley, after a long perusal of the carpet. Wouldn't a parson be almost too high learned to bring up a lad, to be a man o' business? My notion o' the parsons was as they'd got a sort o' learning as lay mostly out o' sight. And that isn't what I want for Tom. I want him to know figures, and write like print, and see into things quick, and know what folks mean, and how to wrap things up in words as aren't actionable. It's an uncommon fine thing, that is, concluded Mr. Tulliver, shaking his head, when you can let a man know what you think of him without paying for it. Oh, my dear Tulliver, said Mr. Riley, you're quite under a mistake about the clergy. All the best schoolmasters are of the clergy. The schoolmasters who are not clergymen are a very low set of men generally. That Jacobs is, at the academy, interposed Mr. Tulliver. To be sure, men who have failed in other trades, most likely. Now, a clergyman is a gentleman by profession and education. And besides that, he has the knowledge that will ground a boy, and prepare him for entering on any career with credit. There may be some clergymen who are mere bookmen, but you may depend upon it, Stelling is not one of them, a man that's wide awake, let me tell you. Drop him a hint, and that's enough. You talk of figures now, you have only to say to Stelling, I want my son to be a thorough arithmetician, apostrophe, and you may leave the rest to him. Mr. Riley paused a moment, while Mr. Tulliver, somewhat reassured, as to clerical tutorship, was inwardly rehearsing to an imaginary Mr. Stelling the statement, "I want my son to know arithmetic." "You see, my dear Tulliver," Mr. Riley continued, "when you get a thoroughly educated man, like Stelling, he's at no loss to take up any branch of instruction. When a workman knows the use of his tools, he can make a door as well as a window." "Eh, that's true," said Mr. Tulliver, almost convinced now that the clergy must be the best of schoolmasters. "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do for you," said Mr. Riley, "and I wouldn't do it for everybody. I'll see Stelling's father-in-law, or drop him a line, when I get back to Mudport, to say that you wish to place your boy with his son-in-law, and I dare say Stelling will write to you, and send you his terms. But there's no hurry, is there?" said Mrs. Tulliver. "For I hope, Mr. Tulliver, you won't let Tom begin at his new school before midsummer. He began at the academy at the Lady Day Quarter, and you see what good's come of it." "Eh, eh, Bessie, never brew why bad malt upo Michael Mosday, else you'll have a poor tap," said Mr. Tulliver, winking and smiling at Mr. Riley, with the natural pride of a man who has a buxom wife conspicuously his inferior in intellect. "Be but it's true there's no hurry, you've hit it there, Bessie. It might be as well not to defer the arrangement too long," said Mr. Riley, quietly, "for Stelling may have propositions from other parties, and I know he would not take more than two or three boarders, if so many. If I were you, I think I would enter on the subject with Stelling at once. There's no necessity for sending the boy before midsummer, but I would be on the safe side, and make sure that nobody forestalls you." "Eh, there's some mad in that," said Mr. Tulliver. "Father," broke in Maggie, who had stolen unperceived to her father's elbow again, listening with parted lips, while she held her doll topsy-turvy and crushed its nose against the wood of the chair, "eh, dear, is it a long way off where Tom is to go? Shan't we ever go to see him?" "I don't know, my wench," said the father, tenderly. "Ask Mr. Riley, he knows." Maggie came round promptly in front of Mr. Riley, and said, "How far is it, please, sir?" "Oh, a long, long way off," that gentleman answered, being of opinion that children, when they are not naughty, should always be spoken to jocosely. "Why, you must borrow the 7-league boots to get to him." "That's nonsense," said Maggie, tossing her head haughtily, and turning away, with the tears springing in her eyes. She began to dislike Mr. Riley. It was evident he thought her silly, and of no consequence. "Hush, Maggie! For shame of you, asking questions and chattering," said her mother. "See, come and sit down on your little stool, and hold your tongue, do." "But," added Mrs. Tulliver, who had her own alarm awakened, "is it so far off as I couldn't wash him and mend him?" "About 15 miles, that's all," said Mr. Riley. "Why, you can drive there and back in a day quite comfortably. Or Stelling is a hospitable, pleasant man, he'd be glad to have you stay." "But it's too far off for the linen, I doubt," said Mrs. Tulliver, sadly. The entrance of supper opportunely adjourned this difficulty, and relieved Mr. Riley from the labor of suggesting some solution or compromise, a labor which he would otherwise doubtless have undertaken. For, as you perceive, he was a man of very obliging manners, and he had really given himself the trouble of recommending Mr. Stelling to his friend Tulliver without any positive expectation of a solid, definite advantage resulting to himself, notwithstanding the subtle indications to the contrary which might have misled a too sagacious observer. For there is nothing more widely misleading than sagacity, if it happens to get on a wrong scent, and sagacity, persuaded that men usually act and speak from distinct motives, with a consciously proposed end in view, is certain to waste its energies on imaginary game. Plotting covetousness and deliberate contrivance, in order to compass a selfish end, are nowhere abundant, but in the world of the dramatist. They demand to intense a mental action for many of our fellow parishioners to be guilty of them. It is easy enough to spoil the lives of our neighbors without taking so much trouble. We can do it by lazy acquiescence and lazy omission, by trivial falsities for which we hardly know a reason, by small frauds neutralized by small extravagances, by maladroit flatteries, and clumsily improvised insinuations. We live from hand to mouth, most of us, with a small family of immediate desires. We do little else than snatch a morsel, to satisfy the hungry brood, rarely thinking of seed corn or the next year's crop. Mr. Riley was a man of business, and not cold toward his own interest, yet even he was more under the influence of small promptings than of far-sighted designs. He had no private understanding with the Rev. Walter Stelling. On the contrary, he knew very little of that M. A. and his acquirements, not quite enough, perhaps, to warrant so strong a recommendation of him as he had given to his friend Tulliver. But he believed Mr. Stelling to be an excellent classic, for Gadsby had said so, and Gadsby's first cousin was an Oxford tutor, which was better ground for the belief even than his own immediate observation would have been, for though Mr. Riley had received a tincture of the classics at the Great Mudport Free School, and had a sense of understanding Latin generally, his comprehension of any particular Latin was not ready. Doubtless there remained a subtle aroma from his juvenile contact with the Aeson Hecate and the fourth book of the Aeneid, but it had ceased to be distinctly recognizable as classical, and was only perceived in the higher finish and force of his auctioneering style. Then, Stelling was an Oxford man, and the Oxford men were always it was the Cambridge men who were always good mathematicians. But a man who had had a university education could teach anything he liked, especially a man like Stelling, who had made a speech at a Mudport dinner on a political occasion, and had acquitted himself so well that it was generally remarked, the son-in-law of Timpson's was a sharp fellow. It was to be expected of a Mudport man, from the parish of St. Ursula, that he would not omit to do a good turn to a son-in-law of Timpson's, for Timpson was one of the most useful and influential men in the parish, and had a good deal of business, which he knew how to put into the right hands. Mr. Riley liked such men, quite apart from any money which might be diverted, through their good judgment, from less worthy pockets into his own. And it would be a satisfaction to him to say to Timpson on his return home, "I've secured a good pupil for your son-in-law." Timpson had a large family of daughters. Mr. Riley felt for him. Besides, Louisa Timpson's face, with its light curls, had been a familiar object to him over the pew wainscot on a Sunday for nearly 15 years. It was natural her husband should be a commendable tutor. Moreover, Mr. Riley knew of no other schoolmaster whom he had any ground for recommending in preference. Why, then, should he not recommend Stelling? His friend Tulliver had asked him for an opinion. It is always chilling, in friendly intercourse, to say you have no opinion to give. And if you deliver an opinion at all, it is mere stupidity not to do it with an air of conviction and well-founded knowledge. You make it your own in uttering it, and naturally get fond of it. Thus Mr. Riley, knowing no harm of Stelling to begin with, and wishing him well, so far as he had any wishes at all concerning him, had no sooner recommended him than he began to think with admiration of a man recommended on such high authority, and would soon have gathered so warm an interest on the subject, that if Mr. Tulliver had in the end declined to send Tom to Stelling, Mr. Riley would have thought his read of the old school a thoroughly pig-headed fellow. If you blame Mr. Riley very severely for giving a recommendation on such slight grounds, I must say you are rather hard upon him. Why should an auctioneer and appraiser 30 years ago, who had as good as forgotten his free school Latin, be expected to manifest a delicate scrupulosity which is not always exhibited by gentlemen of the learned professions, even in our present advanced stage of morality? Besides, a man with the milk of human kindness in him can scarcely abstain from doing a good-natured action, and one cannot be good-natured all round. Nature herself occasionally quarters an inconvenient parasite on an animal toward whom as he has otherwise no ill will. What then? We admire her care for the parasite. If Mr. Riley had shrunk from giving a recommendation that was not based on valid evidence, he would not have helped Mr. Stelling to a paying pupil, and that would not have been so well for the reverend gentleman. Consider, too, that all the pleasant little dim ideas and complacencies of standing well with Timpson, of dispensing advice when he was asked for it, of impressing his friend Tulliver with additional respect, of saying something, and saying it emphatically, with other inappreciably minute ingredients that went along with the warm hearth, and the brandy and water to make up Mr. Riley's consciousness on this occasion, would have been a mere blank. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.